You are listening to Read It, Roll It, Hole It.
He's 2 punts from victory.
Only needs one.
Welcome, golfers, to the 16th episode of the Read It, Roll It, Hole It podcast. Today, we've got special guest Jamie Edwards. Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you for having me. Great to see you.
Great to see you again. You're a... what's your official title? Like a peak performance coach, or what would you say? Like, what do you say in the bio?
Well, in the bio, the bio's very fluid these days. So I don't have a title these days, and I kind of like that. But you know, historically, you know me as the performance coach. You know, I help people think differently. I've helped, you know, that's what I've done for a long time. And you know, people say, what is it that you do? And I don't actually do something, but if you're going to hang your hat on it, because I get called lots of things, the motivational guy, the, you know, the sports psychologist, it's performance. You know, I help people go to a different level, whether it's for the sport or for the career or for the life.
I love that. I'll start with sort of going back to when we first met and share my experience with you, what I sort of remember from that day. So my first week as a PGA pro at the Belfry, there was like hundreds of us in the room, absolutely like bricking it there, didn't know anyone, like in you come, like, and I just remember, I don't know, your energy to start with, like you're just like crazy, man, and just going bonkers and everyone's like, who is this dude? I remember a joke of some description around basketball and then looking at my shoes. Do you, like, I recall something like that. Do you remember that?
I could definitely, the basketball one. I'm not quite sure I recall the looking at your shoes, but I think, oh, I know. It's like most people actually do look at me and then look at my shoes and then think, where were you, a basketball player? Yeah, so
that's it. Because you're not 6 foot six.
Well, no, I'm not 6'6". I always said I was 6'5", and just turned the numbers around, which was my first introduction to mental training, and it's interesting that, you know, when were you a trainee? When were we in that room together?
2010.
Wow, that's decade. Amazing. A decade ago, and it's interesting. You know, I always say to people, you know, they kind of they underestimate what's possible in 10 years. You know, I remember 2010 for lots of different reasons. You know, I ruptured my Achilles tendon in July 2010, which, you know, was a significant emotional event. And so you kind of remember those things. And, you know, the following year got divorced and, you know, and no, I think, well, the divorce didn't happen that year, but, you know, we separated that year. So I actually remember a decade ago, and I've just been literally just speaking to a guy, you know, in the other room and saying to him, you know, that time is very important in terms of, you know, people think, wow, 10 years, that's a long time. But in the course of your life, it's not a long time. And the key word that you've just mentioned is energy. And I think, I'm not talking about that energy that's like kind of, you know, you said I was in the room and I was like, oh, you know, like this crazy guy, who is this dude? But I think if you think about golf and you think about sports and you think about your career and you think about life, that word right now is very important, energy. Not an energy where you're like all over the place, just what's your energy like, your mental energy. And some people will put health on that, mental health, but what mental health is what's your mental energy like? What's your energy like? What's your energy at the club like? It's kind of a broader context of energy. What's your energy like for your game at this moment in time? So I like the fact that you've mentioned energy.
Totally. I remember like sat there all nervous and not knowing anyone. And I think you got us all up and like introducing each other and playing not stupid games, but silly fun games, like, you know, like tapping each other on the back and then telling them the name of your dog and like just random stuff like that. And it really was a great icebreaker. I just remember all of a sudden 10 minutes in, like feeling buzzing and like not that nervous energy anymore and feeling like, wow, this is like exciting. There was one thing you said that I perhaps use this to pass on to my students now, is like, was jump off the lily pad.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and I'm glad you said that, because that's, you know, that's a hell of a reminder for me. And, you know, it makes me feel quite emotional that you remember that, because, you know, I always say you can't just be saying that stuff without making it applicable. You know, I told the story of a sales guy who, you know, he kept saying to me, you're going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and, you know, next year I'm going to do this. And I said to him, I said, George, you've been saying that for like, you know, the past 4 years, five frogs on a lily pad, one of them decides to jump. And I said, how many are left? And he said four. And I said, no, there's five left, because he only decided to jump. He didn't actually jump. It's so important that there's a big difference in deciding you're going to do something and actually going to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's having the balls just to go for it, isn't it? Like, one thing, thinking it, but then it's like actually going, right, let's do it. That's cool. I've still got my book here as well. That I've got some notes in there as well, that it's like, find out my source and then go get it. What's the action I need?
So source is energy, Ollie. You know, when I say the source, which is like the ketchup, but it's what, find your source of energy. What is that? Who is that? Where is that? You know, it's a combination of, I mean, what have you been doing? Tell me what you've been doing with you know, in the past decade.
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, obviously, when we met, like year one assistant, but I, you know, those sort of things I remember from a long time, and I'd say they helped me go to the next level, which was I joined Tim Hall at Ross and White Golf Club, which is where I am now. I've been there for 8 years with Tim, and he just won Foremost Pro of the Year. I know you've worked with Foremost before, and Paul Hodges and those guys, and he just won that. And I sort of, yeah, jumped off the lily pad, if you will, and messaged Tim saying, look, you're number one. I want to be number one. So like, employ me. Kind of how it started, and Tim was, you know, it still is, very sort of driven, and he was very keen to help me set up my brand.
And I told you all those years back, didn't I, about, you know, maybe in your session, I don't know whether I did, but the reason why I got into golf was because a lawyer at the time had said to me, I'm going to introduce you to somebody, we're going to play golf. He said, you do know how to play golf, don't you? And I said, no. And he was trying to open a door or connect me. And I vowed never to turn down a corporate golf invitation again. And so I went and learned how to play golf. And I've still to this day, I say to people, the best career move you could make, if you're not a golfer, like, you know, if you're a business guy or a girl or whatever, I say it's the best career move you can make, because you're going to get the opportunity to walk and talk with somebody that you would never get in an office. And so the story continues, because here's, like, we met a decade ago, and it was almost a decade before that where this conversation happened. It was actually 23 years ago. And so when I did learn how to play golf last year, in fact, this time last year, I called the guy, because I was trying to acquire the Manchester Giants basketball team 23 years ago, and he was a lawyer. And 23 years on, I call him October last year, and I said to him, I said, Mark, do you remember the basketball deal? And he said, yeah, of course. Now, very unlike me, not spoke to him for 20 years, but I tracked him down. And I said to him, Ollie, I said, well, it's back on. And I said to him, he said, what have you been doing for 20 years? I said, I've been getting ready for this. And because he had no idea what I'd been doing. So he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, I've been training brains of, you know, these top players and these. And then it dawned on me. I said, and then I went, Mark, you are the reason why I've helped so many people and so many thousands of golfers. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, if it wasn't for you inviting me to that corporate golf day, I would never have got into golf like I did do. And then all of a sudden, I swear, all the PGA sessions just flashed in front of me. Like, because this one guy said to me, he said, you do play golf, don't you? And if he had not have said that, and that's why I always say to you guys that you have such an opportunity, even today in this environment, I will always maintain PGA Pro, the biggest opportunities.
Jamie, talk to us about, like you mentioned the Giants there, like who have you worked with over the years? And then can you expand maybe on like the different characters and what you've learned from those different characters over the years?
Well, I think, you know, if I go back to very early days, I've always been a mental coach. You know, I learned very early from whether it was my mother, who was probably my first mental coach, who said, you know, you got to walk down the street. You know, you got to be two steps ahead instead of one step, because if somebody takes a step, then they've caught up with you. So those were like my first early days of being mentored and coached. To then my basketball mentor, who's still a mentor today, who was Alton Bird, arguably the best American basketballer to come to this country, and said, the difference between you and the next person, didn't say player, he said person, the difference is not talent or ability, it's how you think. PGA pros, please listen to this, okay? And listen to this connection that the superbike rider that called me last week, that came to see me on Saturday, came from a guy that owns a golf club in North Yorkshire. And the guy that owns a golf club in North Yorkshire, his professional, remembers me from the session that I did at the Belfry. Now, here's what's important about that. I've said to you guys all the time, you invest in people and you invest in the relationships, and you don't know when it's going to come back to you. And I said to this superbike rider, I said, how did you find out about me? How did you look? And he said, you know, from Roger. Roger owns the golf club, and his professional had been in a room with you. You don't give people value and expect something back immediately. What you do is you give value and it comes back to you. You just don't know when.
With going into, like, you know, you mentioned like the thoughts and sort of different individuals, everyone being sort of, you know, a different level of craziness. Who's like, I don't know, can not name people who are like crazy, but like, how do you as a coach manage those different personalities?
Listen, here's the thing. Like, people say, what's normal? There isn't a normal. What normal compared to what? You know, that's like if you go to South America and you say, what's normal weather? And then you come to Manchester and you say, what's normal weather? So there's a lot of difference in human beings. And so it's interesting that you take the traits of all individuals and you say, well, what is it that we can learn from it? What's your naturalness? You know, everybody's got a naturalness in them, you know, and I'll use the example of somebody saying, well, let's say they're quite shy. Yeah. Well, that might be somebody's naturalness. You saying crazy, that means, you know, we have this label of what crazy is. For me, I kind of say, well, there's a time and a place. There's a certain energy of crazy. There'll be times when I need to be crazy, yeah? And that's whether that's good crazy or not good crazy. I'm going to use a different emotion. Let's call it angry, okay? There's a time to be angry and a time not to be angry. There's a place to be angry and a place not to be angry. There's a time to be playful and a time not to be playful. And so what I call this, Ollie, is there's a certain mode that you need to be in. And for those people listening or watching, if you think of your mobile phone, it has airplane mode. And you can switch it into airplane mode or you could switch it off. And we all have a mode. And for some people, it's boy mode or girl mode. And for some, it's man mode or woman mode. And that's like a almost like a maturity that you've got this insight in being able to have control and influence of your mental state or energy. And so when you say crazy, crazy can be a behavior or it can be an emotional state. And it's understanding yourself enough to have that awareness. Is it that I'm being crazy or is it that I am crazy?
So tell them, Jamie, like you've got an obvious sort of will to want to help others. Where does that come from and why, you know, why are you that way, do you think?
It's a great question or observation. It comes from me experiencing being mentored as a young man from, you know, I mentioned before Altenburg, but I think for me it's just a passion to help and see people go to a different level. I think the key word that, you know, I often use is access. You know, not everybody has the same resources, but you can have access. And I think things like, you know, podcasts and books and courses and seminars, you know, also change that. But I've experienced that having access to people or information can really separate, you know, one player from another. And so, or one person from another. So it's not ability. So I've just always had a passion for helping others. And, you know, whether that's in sports or, you know, I just sat down, it's something I love seeing that look on somebody's face when they get that insight, that aha moment.
I think, you know, it's obviously part that wanting the help is part of your why, going back to what we sort of spoke about at the start, right? Finding your source, that's obviously something that's deep in your source.
Yeah, that is. It's, you know, we're not here forever, Ollie. We're certainly not here forever. And sometimes we need reminding of that. I think there is that reminder that people having an awareness of time, and you only need to be around loved ones to know, you know, that you might get a phone call. And this is happening. It's not a, you know, I was just about to say, it's not an uplifting conversation, this topic, but, you know, I was on the phone to a lifelong friend in San Francisco who, you know, said, you know, they've got the C word, they've got cancer. And then, you know, a few days before, you know, we're remembering, you know, one of the coaches of the basketball team, because he passed away, you know, far too early, you know, from that as well. And so that's just the reminder that you have to, whether it's on the golf course or off the golf course or in sports or in life, is just remember, you know, to be in the moment.
Powerful stuff. Yeah, I like that, Jamie. It's as you said, present moment. It gets you in that sort of moment. Jamie, can we help these golfers with a little bit of advice on what they can practice or work on, or just even what you can talk about in their pre-shot routine? So what they do before they hit a shot. Obviously, we know they've got to, you know, assess the golf technical stuff, but from a mind point of view, and can you sort of go into a simple model, like from my sort of simple brain would be like people talk about going from left side to right hand side, taking that conscious to non-conscious.
It's a big topic, that, isn't it? it's a big topic. But if I was going to simplify it into, I'd simplify it into what we talked about at the beginning, which is energy. I would have you consider what's your energy like going into the shot, or what's your energy like walking onto the green, or what's your energy like, you know, going to the golf course. And that's what everybody's in control of their energy. And their energy is also influenced by what you see, what you hear, and how you feel. You know, whether it's before you do anything, you know, I was asking myself before getting on this call, what's my energy like? Ask this question, what can I enjoy about this shot? Now, all of a sudden, if I'm thinking about what I could enjoy, I could enjoy my stroke. I could enjoy, you know, it's an important question because it's stating, it's preempting that you are going to enjoy something.
I love that, Jamie. It's a nice question, isn't it? The sort of even the word enjoy is, it's not going to bring negative thoughts, is it? When we say enjoy, we think of the nice things in life. So it can sort of, spin those nerves or whatever, or the, you know, worrying about where the stuff is, where the rubbish is.
You know, I can't control outcomes, but if you put me on a golf course right now, that would be one thing. What can I enjoy about today? And I think what was interesting, listening to several people during lockdown, when after lockdown, and about the golf games, what they said was they were enjoying it more, and they played, some of them played some of their best golf in those first weeks after being able to, because they were going to enjoy their golf.
It's interesting. They went out then, they noticed, you know, how beautiful the course is, or they really appreciate it. When you have it all the time, then you sort of lose that perspective. And when you go back after so long, it's like, oh my God, like how beautiful is this place? So that sort of part, which is cool. You just mentioned, well, you didn't call it visualization, but you got me visualizing a ball rolling on the green. As a putting coach, I sort of talk to my golfers about this being like one of the most important skills in putting and in life in many ways. Sort of helping, getting the player to sort of simulate the shot before they hit it. Can you expand on that and perhaps, I don't know, give us some sort of some technique? I know we all visualize slightly different, but anything you can expand or add to visualization?
Well, we're doing it all the time. You know, if people think about how did they get into the car, or how do they walk down the stairs, you know, when they're at home, you know, so you're always, how do you drive? How do you get back home? You're always in your mind, doing some kind of visualization. You know, if you're thinking about what you're going to do tonight, that is some kind of visualization. So it's something that we do. It's something that we need to be more aware of. It can be a strength, but it can also be a weakness, because it depends on what you're actually visualizing. So the way I like to refer to it, it's a bit like Netflix. You know, you'll sit in front of the TV and you'll have the remote control, and you'll be scanning all of the shows, and it's like you see them all flash in front of you, and you get to choose. And as soon as you stop, then it's like the image then expands with that show. And so that's how your mind is working as well. And it's working that way consciously, and it's also doing it without you even knowing. And so I think, depending on the context, there are different ways to expand on visualization. Writing something down is expanding on visualization, you know, because if I'm describing my day or describing my round of golf, or then you are having to visualize. If I'm going back to those PGA days at the Belfry, then automatically, you know, those images of those great times that we had in those sessions are coming back to mind. And that's because I'm verbally doing it. So I can write it, or I can verbally do it. So there's so many other ways. Um, if if you're rehearsing your putting stroke, which I'm sure you do with your clients, Ollie, if you're rehearsing your putting stroke physically, then you're also bringing back feelings and images. So I guess the key thing is to be sensory aware of, can I mix them all together? You know, like a cocktail, can I mix them all together? Can I mix physically? Can I mix the sounds and the auditory, or can I do that also visually? So the key thing is not to think that visualization is just seeing things, okay? It's
so using like all the senses?
Using all the senses, And if you, it's almost like you give yourself a better chance if you're adding other sensory modalities to your practice. I know we've kind of we're talking specifically here, but you know, if I'm just sitting and visualizing, that's going to give me a limited result. We called this back in, you know, I learned this from a squash player called Arthur Jacobson. He was a Danish touring professional. And I was about 13 at the time, and he was on a squash court just with no racket, no ball. And he was running around the court simulating hitting shots, drop shots, getting back into position, playing the whole point through as though he had a racket and a ball. And when, so I'm a curious 13-year-old at the time, and he came off the court and I asked him, I said, what were you doing? And he said, I was ghosting. And I said, what's ghosting? And he said, well, if I can't do it without a racket and without a ball, then I have no chance of doing it with a racket and with a ball. And so I kind of adapted that to my basketball training. And I know, you know, golf coaches do it with, you know, with your teaching, with putting, with the full swing. You know, it's you're simulating, you know, the movement. But what you're doing is you're actually engaging all the senses. So it's a, you know, if you want to almost download the movement. If you imagine like the film The Matrix, when Neo downloaded all that information quickly, and then it was like he knew jiu-jitsu. It's kind of that type of it's that type of shortening the learning curve when you mix all the senses together.
Well, that's quite cool. I like that the squash player there simulating it. And We've all played, you know, a bad hole from time to time. So, like, you know, I'm thinking amateur golfers, you know, blobbing the hole, hitting the water in the trees, topping it in the bunker, pick up. And quite often amateur golfers allow that, and juniors to some extent, so some allow, you know, allow that to affect their next shot. And a sort of a nice way to, you know, see someone overcome a bad hole was last week. Tiger Woods, you know, had a 10 on the 12th. A lot of sort of short-sighted people perhaps are talking about Tiger's 10. I think the open-minded sort of growth mindset golfers and people are talking about how he responded to that. And he had 5 birdies in the last 6 holes after that. Talk me through, how does Tiger do that? What sort of coping strategies could you give golfers to help them with overcoming and forgetting the last hole to be able to, you know, start again on the next?
This is why there's never, you know, I always say, you know, that I could talk for 5 days without coming up for air. And this is I think this sums up golf and life, that there are going to be bad holes. You are going to hit bad shots. If Tiger does that, then guess what? Whatever other level that you play at, you're going to do it also. And for most people, and this is, you know, remember we talked about having chats and conversations, all right? This is this is the very honest conversation in terms of performance, Ollie, is that people accepting, and it's, you know, I've heard lots of different people over the years talk about, well, you shouldn't accept hitting bad shots, or I'm sorry, the reality is at any level of the game, you're going to hit bad shots and you're going to have a poor hole. And it is the ability to deal with that. And dealing with it means, can I let go of it? In another context, I'm going to give you the skill of the mental game is, can I let go of it? Can I heal it? Can I resolve it? Can I deal with it? So can I let go of the bad hole? Can I let go of the bad round? Can I let go that, you know, something's happened in my life or the relationship? Can I heal it? Can I heal the wounds? Yeah. And if you're not healing the wounds, then go and, you know, find ways to. That's the difference. Tiger has had a career of facing and being able to deal with what's thrown at him. He also has certain skills and develop certain skills to be able to deal with those as well. Ultimately, yes, does talent come into it? Yes, but there is also a certain part of the game which I call wedgeology, which is how good are your wedges and your mental game. So you combine those two together and you've almost got this set of skills, an extra club to be able to focus on. Yeah, I'm not going to have a good day all the time. I ask golfers, you know, my stock question is, how good are your wedges? And they'll say they're okay. And I'll say, well, does okay get you to where you want to be? Because the question, you know, when they say I want to reduce my handicap or I want to get to the tour, if you're saying your wedges are okay, that's not good enough. Now, if Tiger's wedges were only okay, you don't see him posting those scores after having what most people would say his head's gone. And it's because he's mentally strong and it's because he's got a mustard wedge game that he's able to deal with what the golf course throws at him. If he didn't have the confidence in his wedge game and he didn't have that mental ability that you've seen throughout his career, then he doesn't do that. He's then hoping, or ultimately what you find in a lot of, it's not just amateur golfers, because I see lots of professional golfers like that as well, you see an anxiety. There's an anxiety about, am I going to play well? What's the next round going to be like? They're not quite sure. So they're very uncertain. And that uncertainty then is not just on the outside. That uncertainty is on the inside. And it's back to what we said at the beginning. You can't control what's on the outside. You can't control what the course is going to throw at you or the conditions. But what you can control is the reaction to those conditions.
Fantastic, Jamie. There's so many nuggets that you know, and lessons that you just sort of passed on there. That's fantastic. Jamie, just to finish, where can people find your book? I've got your book here, Mental Ketchup, from 10 years, and that's on Amazon, I believe, and it's one of the best books I've ever bought. Where can people connect and find out more about you? And like, I know you do some courses, and if people are interested.
Well, the best way to get me is I always say is send me a message on, you know, you can find me these days on, whether it's on Instagram at JamieEdwards11 or on my email is jedwards@trained-brain.com. You can get me on that or through the website. And, you know, there's, you know, I always say you'll find my phone number somewhere. So just if you want to connect in any kind of way, and what we'll do, Ollie, is we'll will make sure that, you know, that your listeners get to, you know, we'll get you a special code for Wedgeology, which is, you know, which is an online course experience to work on your wedges and your mental game. So we'll get you that as well. So I think, you know, for me, what's been really exciting is that a decade on, and I say this all the time, is you never know when things are going to come back to you. And, you know, this conversation for me has polished my memories of, you know, the times of being at the Belfry and, you know, with the PGA. And that's very important. That's very important, I think, for, you know, what you're doing with your, you know, with your golf or your sport, or whether it's your business or your life, is having the ability to polish memories and polish your own memories. And that will, you know, you're not waiting for the outside world to make you feel good. And so, you know, those people going forward, you know, I'm ready to go and play golf, or I'm ready for the rest of the afternoon. And because, you know, my energy of connecting with you. So that's what people need right now. You know, people talk about, you know, they talk about mental health. And for me, mental health is a reaction. You know, it's thinking in advance. You know, don't wait till you don't feel good and then say, I've got mental health issues. Like, you know, mental health is a label. Just think of it as, you know, what's my energy like? Is it up? Is it down? You know, do I need to connect with somebody? And you can do this. If you're a PGA pro, you know, and I've spoke to many of you, hundreds and hundreds of you over the years, you know, whether it's your golf game, you know, the little white ball, do not let the little white ball have that much of an impact on your personal life, let alone your professional life.